computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to Breakfast Bites, and I am Felicia King. The show that I have for you today is going to talk about some Android vulnerabilities, car hacks, even your insurance dongles might be getting you in trouble, an interesting option for local administrator password solutions, in-private browsing, and some interesting things about Windows 10. So let's roll with that. First, the stage fright Android vulnerability. You've probably heard about it now. I did talk about it on the last show where I was talking about Windows Phone and how Windows Phone is not vulnerable to this sort of a texting hack, at least not at this point in time. This was a specific Android hack. And the main issue that I was focusing on was this time to patch. And this really is an enormous problem. I found it to be such an enormous problem that I just got off of the Android platform altogether. If you can go out and get a black phone, now black phones are like approximately $600 to $650, and then subscribe to the Silent Circle Suite, well, then maybe the Android platform starts making sense for you. Alternatively, what if you were really savvy and you had applied your own Android OS to your phone and you were not utilizing an Android OS that was provided by the cell phone manufacturer? Well, in that circumstance, then yeah, sure, then you can probably keep yourself secure. So I'm looking at the fact that Google themselves have said that they will not release patches for Android operating systems prior to something like 4.2. And when I looked at the statistics on that, there were hundreds of millions of Android devices out there in the world that were still being utilized in production that had those older operating systems. So to me, that's a huge issue. Even if you were to update your phone all by yourself, meaning you'd effectively have to like hack your phone and flash it and put on a whole new operating system, and now you don't have a phone that's supported by your cell phone provider anymore. And I'll just, you know, I realize that 99.9% of you out there, that's not an option for you. And I agree. So unless you're willing to go to that limit, then you don't have access to that as a solution for patching your Android phone. Okay, so if you do get an Android phone and it is supported by the phone provider, the problem is that all the phone providers are taking more than 6 months, typically, in order to release a software update. On the other hand, Apple has been pretty good about staying on top of the updates. And in addition to that, Windows Phone updates come out, you know, as they're available. And I've been very pleased with the security of that. So it comes down more to an issue of taking the cell phone providers out of the mix. If you look at iPhones, Apple themselves, they're directly in control of what security patches you get on your iPhone and your iPad devices. If you look at the Windows Phone, Microsoft is responsible for that. And so they're cutting out the middleman, and it's working out much better, obviously. And so I would encourage you to think about possibly getting onto a different phone platform other than Android, where the Android phone is provided by the cell phone provider. Again, if you went to black phone or you got your own cell phone where you had your own operating system on there, where you were the one who was responsible for flashing that and everything, well, then I think that would work just fine. All right, so let's move on to the car hacking revolution. This is something that I find really exciting because the Black Hat conferences were just over the last couple of weeks, and there was a bunch of them that happened around the world. And it has been several years now since the original car hacking stuff came out. In fact, the two-year gag order has just recently expired on the original White Hat researchers who exposed some Volkswagen vulnerabilities. And because Volkswagen had sued these people to basically put a gag order on them, which I found to be rather irritating. But Because that's not really how you solve the problem. What they should have done is just hired these guys and said, you know, hey, we would like you to help us understand how to secure our car. And then they could have put some sort of non-disclosure agreement in the contract for employment. They could have handled it that way as opposed to suing them. It's just so the way that Volkswagen handled that, I just really find to be in alignment with the wrong goals. And I would say their goal was to hush it up as opposed to shed some light on it and take care of the issue. But that's my perspective. Now, these car hacks have really been getting publicized. They're in the forefront of everybody's mind, and there's a lot of them. And I think this is great because it's finally to the point now where the car manufacturers have mechanisms in place to deal with the found vulnerabilities. And it's been recently come to light that Tesla has a phenomenal system for remotely updating cars. And that's a bit of a, you know, double-edged sword. I mean, on one hand, if you're somebody who trusts your automobile to be remotely accessible to the manufacturer, then good, because then the, you know, Tesla can actually push an over-the-air update to your automobile. But if you're somebody who does not wish to drive around in a vehicle that could remotely be accessed through that mechanism, which of course a nation state could most definitely access that vehicle through that same mechanism, because they would be able to have a raw man-in-the-middle attack on the data without any ability to inspect that or to understand that that's happening, whether it be from the car provider side or your side. So I see a vulnerability there in terms of if the vehicle is allowed to be remote controlled by any level, then that in itself is a security concern. But it depends on what your level of tolerance and interest is. Hopefully, the car manufacturers will just say, well, let's have this as an option. The ideal world, in my mind, is that they would allow you to have selective timing on the over-the-air updates. And what I mean by that is, if you are literally driving the car, then no over-the-air update should be going on at all, like ever. Like that whole remote accessibility function, as far as I'm concerned, I would just turn it off while I'm driving the vehicle. Because as long as you're driving the vehicle and you're in it and the car gets hacked, well, you could be dead now. On the other hand, if the car is, you know, parked in your garage and you have to manually hook up a network jack to it or something like that in order to get the update, that would be, to me, that's optimal. I'd just as soon as say, well, I've got to manually hook up my car to a network jack so that I can get the updates to my car. I would rather do that than have it over the air accessible. But that is a, I think that's too, quote, inconvenient for people. So they're not demanding that level of security. And I think we're going to end up with a bunch of cars that are going to continue to be hackable, and people are going to continue to be killed in their cars that got remotely hacked, like Michael Hastings as an example. But on the positive side, there's a lot of interest and a lot of people talking about this and working on this, and that means that it's getting more out in the open and the car manufacturers are having to pay attention to this. So that's good. Of also related interest is the insurance dongles. You know, if you get one of those dongles that plugs into your car and it's from the insurance company and they're supposed to be giving you like an insurance premium discount for safe driving based upon monitoring this. Well, it turns out that some Black Hat Conference researchers had specified that, and they actually demonstrated it, that they hacked one of these insurance key fobs and used it to back hack the car and control the systems on the car. And we're not talking about air conditioning and radio here. We're talking about literally the controls of the car, like steering and brakes and accelerator. So that is an enormous problem. And if you have an insurance dongle, you may want to strongly reconsider whether or not you want that thing hooked up to your car. And there's also digital key fobs, specifically from Volkswagen, that have been utilized in order to, again, back hack the car and then take it over while you're driving. Really not cool. As I said, the positive side, though, is that people are paying attention to this, so hopefully we'll get some better forward traction on having all the car companies fix these vulnerabilities and just stop doing silly things in general with regards to poor design out of the box. Let's talk about the local administrator password solution. This is, it's literally what it's called, local administrator password solution. So if you are an IT manager and you happen to be wondering, how can I have a unique local admin password for all of my systems and not have to be thinking about what that password is and storing it in an Excel spreadsheet or something like that? Then I would suggest you go out there and get the local admin password solution. This is a supported tool from Microsoft. There was previously another option that they had proposed some time ago, and it's nowhere near as functional and cool as this thing is. This thing is actually pretty darn slick. You can have it store the lapse password, so the randomized unique local admin password, literally inside of Active Directory in a field that is accessible only to authorized admins. Very cool stuff. And way better than a situation where one of your systems gets stolen, somebody hacks the local admin password. Of course, if your system was actually encrypted, that would kind of be irrelevant. So, of course, yes, use encryption. But let's say they get that local admin password and you were using that on all of your systems. Well, that is a problem. So, that's what this lapse solution is designed for. And if you are just somebody who does remote desktop to PCs and servers, regardless of whether or not you are an IT manager, I would suggest you take a look at ASG Remote Desktop. This is a tool that I've been using for years, and I was recently talking to some IT managers that I support, and they were just really telling me about how satisfied they are with that solution. And it's called ASG Remote Desktop. It used to be called VRD Remote Desktop, but Vision App was purchased by a company called ASG. And so ASG, of course, has rebranded their product. And frankly, ASG has done a much better job of patching that product. So you can get a free license of it, and that will allow you to control up to three machines simultaneously. If you buy a license for it, then you can, it's unlimited. And I have the unlimited license and I really prefer it, frankly. So it gives you tabbed view of the machines that you are currently controlling. On the left-hand side, you get a tree view that is categorized based upon, however you want to categorize it. And you can really use it to control, group, manage very efficiently and effectively all kinds of devices that you are controlling with RDP, Remote Desktop Protocol. And it's even possible to utilize a central database that you share amongst a whole bunch of IT admins. So this is pretty slick. And there is a record feature. Now, that does not have audio, but the record feature is really, really handy. I've used it several times. Let's say you've got somebody who says, "Well, how do I do this?" And you can remote desktop into, say, a test virtual machine that you have. So you've RDP'd to a machine where you can simulate the procedure that you wish to train somebody on. And you can do your little record button. And then it will record this video, and then what you do with that video after that point in time is up to you. You could, of course, rip it and publish it to YouTube if you wished. But the fact that it's got this record feature in there is pretty slick, because alternatively, you'd have to get something like Camtasia in order to get a video of your, you know, activities. So ASG Remote Desktop, it's free. That the free version will allow you to control up to three systems simultaneously, which for a lot of people, that's all you need. Let's talk about in-private browsing, or private browsing. It depends on the browser that you're using. It depends on what they call it, right? But ultimately, it's all the same concept. It's called private browsing. This works in Google, Firefox, and Internet Explorer, and of course the new browser that's replacing Internet Explorer. And I believe that thing is called Edge, although I haven't tested it yet. But private browsing is a concept that is, you guys may or may not even be aware of it. You may have accidentally used in private browsing at some point in time. So private browsing is intended to be a level of incognito mode, effectively. And when you are using your browser, usually, so in a non-private browsing methodology, it exposes things like your history. It's retaining that, and the history of your searches, what all of your searches were, ranking, cookies, what's your actual browsing cache, what are your active logins, usernames, and passwords, and so forth. Any offline cached website data is stored there, site preferences, and things like that. Now, the problem with that is that that information can, of course, be harvested. There is actually the possibility to cross-harvest between tabs within the same browser, and this is why good standard security practices when you are doing online banking says, don't have a tab open to Yahoo or, you know, anything else, frankly, while you have one tab open to your online banking site. If you're going to do online banking, well, just do your online banking. And then when you're done, then you log off of your online banking site so you no longer have any open session credentials into the online banking site. Then close your browser window. And when you close your browser window, you've effectively, assuming that your browser is configured to dump the cache and to dump sessions, when you close the browser at that point in time, then it will do that for you. So if you kind of isolate your activities that way, then you don't have as big of a risk of things like a cross-site scripting attack being able to bridge from one tab or one site that you're at to another tab that you might have over in your other browser window, or I should say in the same browser window. One way to also handle this is just use two browsers. So if you were doing online banking, do it in one browser, and maybe you were looking at Yahoo, put it in the other browser. I still, though, prefer to not utilize that, because what if, right? What if? And it's this whole thing of what if there was a piece of malware that took over your computer, and now it has leaped beyond the browser, and it's looking at all of the active processes that are running on your system. And I have to tell you, this stuff is out there. It is really, really strongly out there. It's a big deal, and I am so glad that I have all the layers of security that I have, because there are weeks where I will be looking at a report that I get, and my security systems will be reporting to me that it blocked interesting, dangerous things that I had no idea it was blocking. And when I say I had no idea, as a user experience while I'm browsing the internet and as I'm doing things, I don't get some sort of a pop-up that is telling me that bad doo-doo was blocked. Just the bad doo-doo just gets blocked. And then I get reports on it later. And then I look at, oh, well, that's interesting. And of course, I know what I was up to on my computers, so I can correlate that with what was the activity that I was doing and how does that relate to the bad doo-doo that was blocked. But for people out there that do not have this level of sophistication with their security systems, then what is their experience? Number one, is the stuff getting blocked? Quite possibly not. Do they have any awareness of it? I would really argue no. I've run into a lot of people that don't even have their host-based security product correctly configured to where they think that ignorance is bliss. And while I would agree you don't want your software or your security systems to be all in your face and, you know, popping up and prompting you all the time, there is definitely value in either a daily or a weekly report so that you can have an understanding of what's happening on all of your computers. And maybe it's only 5 computers, but still, maybe it's only 2 computers. I would still think you would want a little report that is telling you, hey, you know, I found this many vulnerabilities, or I found this many bad.
Support comes from the App Factory at UW Parkside. Is your business or nonprofit in need of a mobile app? Student interns at the App Factory make state-of-the-art and user-friendly apps for phones and other mobile devices. Web applications, too. For more information, visit appfactory.uwp.edu.
If you're just tuning in, this is Classics by Request, program for 3 hours on Saturday mornings. Music programmed by you. And there is room between now and 1 o'clock this afternoon. If there's something you'd like to hear, either call the toll-free number 1-800-442-7106 or send in your request online. Our website is WPR.org. This next request is also an online request. It's from Kim in Houston, Minnesota. The 3rd annual Apollo Music Festival in Houston, Minnesota will take place August 20th through the 29th. And Kim would like to hear the 3 fantasy pieces, Opus 73 of Robert Schumann, a work that will be featured, a performance with the R2 duo, cellist Ruth Marshall and pianist Garrett Ross. Unfortunately, we do not have a recording with this duo, but I hope you'll enjoy this one. It's featuring cellist Natalia Gutmann and pianist Marta Argerich. Thank you.
update thing is a bit of a shocker for us in the security community, because there's a whole trust issue associated with that. But it's a very interesting feature, and more to come on that later. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you would like to give me some feedback or have some questions, please do contact me at breakfastbites@gmail.com.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a